As the president spoke to a press conference, there was considerable criticism in the Congress and not much active support for the economic proposals Mr. Ford made yesterday. The main criticisms were that his proposals aren't tough enough to do the job. The press conference was held in the White House Rose Garden, and the congressional reaction to the president's anti-inflation, anti-recession plan was reflected in some of the questions he answered. Here's how one exchange went.
A great many people, in fact, think that your proposals were not tough enough, or at least tough on the wrong people. In view of your somewhat apocalyptic vision of what will happen to this country if we don't lick inflation, why didn't you propose mandatory gasoline taxes or gasoline rationing in order to conserve fuel, for example?
We believe that the surtax charges that we have recommended are a more equitable approach to the achievement of greater income, so we could give some relief to the less well-off, the people who have suffered greater, who are suffering greater hardship. We took a look at the gasoline tax recommendations, and we found that this might be harmful to people, and it would be more harmful to the people less able to pay. And in balancing out all of the tax proposals, we came to the conclusion that what we have recommended, which affects only 28% of the personal income taxpayers in this country, was the appropriate way to raise the revenue and dampen inflation.
The president did say that the proposed tax surcharge would not affect many taxpayers and not affect them much.
I checked on it this morning. There has been some criticism of this surtax, both political and otherwise. For a family of four with a $20,000 gross income, that's wages, the one-year extra tax will amount to $42, which is 12 cents a day. For a person on a $15,000 a year income, family of four, there's no extra tax. And if you take it to $16,000 a day, a year, I mean, the added cost of the 15% or the 5% surtax is $3, which is less than 1 cent a day.
Also, in his press conference today, the president said that Project Independence, designed to make us self-sufficient in energy, isn't going as well as he had hoped. He said he'll meet the president of Mexico on the border later this month. He defended, but without much passion, his original request that former President Nixon be allocated $850,000 for his first year out of office. He would not answer a question on the Nixon pardon because he'll testify on that next week. And he said that he has not changed his position, that he will probably run for president in 1976. Also in the news, Secretary of the Treasury Simon met some congressional opposition today to the president's new economic plan. We'll cover that story. And we'll have a report on an encounter Congressman Wilbur Mills had with Washington police early Monday morning, an encounter with some rather colorful aspects. And we'll also take a look at some women in politics. The number of women running for office this year is three times as large as in 1972. Those stories and others after
fine,
this.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
NBC Nightly News is brought to you by Exxon. Today, Exxon is concentrating on finding more energy and getting it to work for you. But someday, the conventional energy sources we depend on will be exhausted. So we are studying something called nuclear fusion, the same energy process which feeds the fires of the sun. Here in this laboratory at the University of Rochester, Exxon is participating in a project to create controlled nuclear fusion on Earth. These scientists are using a series of powerful lasers as a gigantic match to burn or fuse the nuclei of atoms inside this metal chamber. For 1/10 billionth of a second, this laser equipment can focus more power than could all the electric generators in the United States. Commercial power from nuclear fusion may be decades away, but if fusion power can ever be harnessed, we may one day have an almost limitless supply of sun-like energy right here on Earth.
The Congress today began immediate consideration of President Ford's tax surcharge proposal, which calls for a one-year boost in the taxes paid by some taxpayers and all corporations. One witness before the House Ways and Means Committee today was the Secretary of the Treasury, William Simon. Irving R. Levine covered that story.
The proposal for a tax surcharge ran into opposition from congressmen who told Treasury Secretary Simon that it would hit people who can't afford it and would favor corporations. Also, some congressmen questioned Simon's assurance that the surcharge would be needed for only 1 year.
No, I think that that is not a possibility. I think it's being unrealistic, and if we have a surcharge, we certainly have to look at least 2 years and possibly longer. We're not going to come out of this economic crisis, and we better recognize it, in 1 year. It's going to take longer than that, and we're going to have to tighten our belts and keep them tight for a period of time if we're going to get inflation under control.
Well, we won't act on it before the recess, and during the recess, I think the public's going to give us their gauge on what they think of it. Back home, the people will tell us their reaction. I hope it isn't too negative, but if it's quite negative, I think the surtax on individuals is going to have rough sledding.
The hearing made it clear that President Ford's tax proposals won't get acted on until after Congress returns in about 5 weeks from its election recess. And whether or not the proposed 5% tax surcharge will pass then may depend mostly on what reaction congressmen and candidates get from their constituents in the meantime. Irving R. Levine, NBC News at the Capitol.
The House Ways and Means Committee met today without its chairman, Wilbur Mills, but a lot of people were talking about him today. According to the U.S. Park Police, a car in which Mills was riding at 2 a.m. last Monday was stopped for speeding and no lights. The police said today that three women and two men got out and that one of the men said he was Mills. An officer who was at the scene said Mills was intoxicated, that he had a bloody nose and scratches on his face. During the interrogation, one of the women jumped into the tidal basin. She was fished out. Mills was driven home. It all took place at the foot of the Jefferson Memorial, and Ford Rowan has more details.
Before dawn Monday, U.S. Park Police stopped a car speeding with its lights off. The car belongs to Wilbur Mills. Police shielded him from the camera. One of the three women in the car, Annabelle Battistella, began screaming and jumped into the tidal basin. She was rescued by policemen who called it an attempted suicide. There were no arrests, and police listed no names on their official report. Yesterday, a spokesman for Mills said Mills denied he was in the car. But today, police confirmed that the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee was a passenger.
One of the individuals on the scene was identified himself as Congressman Wilbur Mills. There was evidence that the party had been drinking, and that in the judgment of the officers that they were intoxicated. There was an injury to Congressman Mills' face. Apparently, his nose was bleeding, and he had several face wounds.
Mills has not been seen at the Capitol for 3 days, and his absence when important legislation is pending has raised questions about how much the incident has undercut his leadership. Ford Rowan, NBC News, Washington.
Joan Kennedy, the wife of Senator Edward Kennedy, was arrested today for driving while intoxicated. Not far from her home in a suburb of Washington this afternoon, Mrs. Kennedy's car ran into the rear of another car, stopped for a traffic light. That car hit another car. There were no injuries. She was taken to the police station and released on her own recognizance. Mrs. Kennedy has been under medical treatment for emotional problems.
America's demand for oil is soaring, and the supply under our lands is dwindling. That's why we must look under the sea for new reserves. It's a big job, and an expensive one. For example, this is a model of what could be the world's tallest drilling platform. Engineers at Exxon are using it to determine how such a huge structure can be safely transported and installed. When an actual platform is built, It could be towed to a drilling site and upended by flooding compartments in the legs. Once in place, it would rise 800 feet, almost as high as the Eiffel Tower. It's an ambitious project, but in view of our need for more energy, a necessary one.
The stock markets made an extraordinary surge today. The Dow Jones Industrials gained more than 28 points. That's the sixth biggest gain on record. Market analysts put it down to the market's belief that President Ford's economic proposals will do some good. But not the Bob Crooms of Chicago. They're one of the families we are reporting on in the course of our Inflation Watch. Rebecca Bell revisited them after the president made public his program.
Bob Croom is still holding down two jobs, driving a city bus and teaching at a Chicago high school. The two jobs bring him $24,000 a year to support his wife and four children. With just one job, Croom would not be affected by the new tax. But two jobs mean more taxes. Mrs. Croom is studying for a college degree. She had two job offers recently and had considered working so that the family would have money for extras and for savings. She talked it over with her husband and decided against a third job in the family. After the surtax was announced, Mrs. Croom felt she'd made the right decision.
It makes me realize that it's no sense in working if I'm going to work for someone else. You know, all my money's going to be gone still either now or later. It's either they're going to take it every week or they're going to get it at the end of the year anyway.
The new tax, President Ford said it was supposed to help inflation. I don't see how it's going to curb inflation because when they add the tax on to the corporations, they're just going to pass it on to the individuals in the form of a price increase, so there we got inflation going on. As far as the two jobs are concerned, I don't know. I'm considering whether I should continue to work the two jobs. But present time, I'll wait and see.
You really can't see the difference in the long run. So I said maybe we'd be better off with just the one job.
With an income of $24,000 a year, the Croom family will not be badly hurt by a 5% surtax. They won't have to do without any essentials, and they don't plan any major cutbacks. But what has been cut back in this family is incentive. Rebecca Bell, NBC News, Chicago.
The skepticism of the Crooms was shared today by the world money markets. The dollar fell in value on all of them. Skepticism about the ability of government or the president to be very persuasive about beating inflation did not begin with Gerald Ford, and David Brinkley has some thoughts on that.
From Lyndon Johnson trying to play down the inflation during the Vietnam War, to the Nixon White House predicting less inflation last year and the year before, to Nixon himself saying that year would be a good year and the next one a great year, when neither of them was, Washington has used up a great deal of its credit with the American people. So President Ford may find people slow to rally around the plans he announced last night. And it's not all his fault, since the public confidence was damaged before he took over. Plus the fact the hopefulness and even euphoria of his first weeks disappeared overnight when he pardoned Nixon, persuading numerous people there was no real change in Washington, just more politics as usual. It is doubtful the Washington political apparatus fully understands the depths of the public disenchantment and impatience of with years of talk without result. In some traveling around, we keep hearing the question, if they think cutting the federal spending will help the inflation, why don't they cut it? Usually the question is asked rhetorically, suggesting they don't really expect very much. So, to announce a new special commission and a new 10-point plan is to invite from a skeptical public another question. Whatever happened to last year's special commission and last year's 10-point plan? John?
The Senate completed congressional action today on a foreign aid measure which says that no military aid will go to Turkey unless the president can report substantial progress on a Cyprus settlement. Mr. Ford has already warned the Congress that he will veto the measure because of the provision on Turkey. And the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, without a dissenting vote, agreed to postpone action on the nomination of Peter Flanagan to be ambassador to Spain. Flanagan, a former Nixon aide, has been accused of offering ambassadorships in return for contributions to the Nixon re-election campaign. Flanagan has denied this charge repeatedly.
If you were an oil man, you'd look at the world two ways today. Suppose the size of each country were in proportion to the oil we know is under its land. The world might look like this to you. The Middle East would become this big because this area has over half the known oil reserves in the world. Other areas are dwarfed by comparison. But if you looked at the world in terms of who actually uses the oil, it might look like this. The United States, which has only 5% of the known reserves, uses 30% of the world's oil. Western Europe, which has only 2%, consumes over 25%. Exxon has presented this look at the world of oil because one of our jobs is getting the oil from where it's found in the world to where it's used.
In Boston today, a federal judge turned down Mayor Kevin White's request for federal marshals to help enforce a federal school busing order. The judge told White to get help from the police forces of surrounding towns. The Boston NAACP had said at the same court hearing that White could do more to control racial violence with the power he has now. Violence continued in Boston today. A store was looted, a house set on fire, and cars were stoned in a black neighborhood. President Ford was asked about forced busing and violence in Boston at his press conference today, and here is some of what he said.
I deplore the violence that I've read about and seen on television. I think that's most unfortunate. I would like to add this, however. The court decision in that case, in my judgment, was not the best solution to quality education in Boston. I have consistently opposed forced busing to achieve racial balance as a solution to quality education. And therefore, I respectfully disagree with the judge's order. But having said that, I think it's of maximum importance that the citizens of Boston respect the law. And I hope and trust that it's not necessary to call in federal officials or federal law enforcement agencies.
Nelson Rockefeller was called on today by the Senate Rules Committee to explain further his gifts of more than $800,000 to three public figures. The president's choice to be vice president said he would answer in writing, and the committee said it would hold up a decision on whether to recall Rockefeller until it gets its answer. One of the people given money by Rockefeller was Henry Kissinger, the Secretary of State. At his press conference today, President Ford said he saw nothing improper in that and added that he knew nothing about the other two gifts. Kissinger is in Cairo today on his Middle East peace mission, and it was announced today that when that is over, Kissinger will go on to Moscow. President Ford said at the press conference today that it's possible he will meet this year with Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev if there is a reason to do so. He was commenting on reports that there will be a summit meeting this November. Diplomatic sources in London say there will be a summit next month in Vladivostok in the Soviet Union. Another source said the meeting will be on a Pacific island. British voters go to the polls tomorrow for the second time this year. A late issue in the campaign was a break-in at the Liberal Party headquarters. Some liberals call that another Watergate, but the police say it was just an ordinary burglary. But Britain's real problems are economic, very serious problems. Here's a report from Garrick Utley.
Here in the town of Newbury, people realize their country is in trouble. But they don't yet really realize that it will mean a drop in their standard of living. The politicians don't want to tell them. When Conservative leader Edward Heath visited Newbury, he briefly acknowledged the gravity of the situation.
It's useless for the Labour Party to pay lip service in its manifesto to say we are facing a great economic crisis, and then throughout this campaign to behave as though it didn't exist. The people of this country in these next few years are going to face a mammoth task of getting this country on its feet.
Heath tried to win votes from homeowners by promising lower interest rates, the promise of the better life, which is not coming.
Then,
Prime Minister Harold Wilson has been just as skilled at giving voters a political sedative. He implies that a Tory, a conservative victory, will mean a return to the three-day work week of last winter, but that a Labour Party win will mean tranquility.
In their hearts, the voters know that the Tories would take the nation back to conflict and confrontation. People want a new deal. They want an industrial peace. They want the chance for them and their families to plan ahead. A bit of peace and quiet to live their own lives in their own way.
For Wilson and Heath, the campaign policy seems to be see no evil, above all, speak no evil about what lies ahead for Britain if they win. But for the man in this helicopter, there is a different campaign tactic. Jeremy Thorpe is the leader of the smaller Liberal Party. In the last election, it won 20% of the vote. In this election campaign, Thorpe is telling voters that wage and price increases will have to be limited by law, like it or not. And most people don't. Thorpe claims he is sane, but the other parties are afraid to admit. But there's no sign his bluntness is winning him new votes. What this election campaign shows is not only a lack of communication between politicians and voters, but also a lack of trust. The politicians do pay lip service to the gravity of Britain's plight, but they still believe the only way to win votes is to promise the better life. That may be good politics, but no one here wants to think about this winter when the promises cannot be kept. Garrick Utley, NBC News in London.
In Washington, Special Prosecutor Leon Jaworski told Federal Judge John Sirica today that the way the court has set up jury selection will make it difficult for the prosecution to make its case in the Watergate cover-up trial. He said the defense was given more jury challenges than the prosecution, and he added that some prospective jurors think it unfair to judge former Nixon aides since the former president has been pardoned without being indicted or prosecuted. In West Virginia today, one school was dynamited, another was set afire, and many coal mines were shut down by pickets who want certain textbooks kept out of schools around Charleston. A dynamite charge blew the front door out of one elementary school while the door of a second school was partly burned. The protesters say the school textbooks are obscene, un-American, and anti-Christian. The U.S. Army said today that about 2,500 draftees still in service will be discharged by Thanksgiving, making the Army an all-volunteer force for the first time since 1940. Some of the draftees will be out before their two-year tour of duty is up. Seven hostages were released tonight from the Venezuelan consulate in Santo Domingo. They had been held there for almost 2 weeks by six terrorists. The terrorists said today that they had said they would release the seven, including an American diplomat, Barbara Hutchison, providing they got safe passage to another country. Tonight, they got that passage to Panama on a plane and in the company of the Panamanian ambassador to the Dominican Republic. Four Americans now in jail in Cuba will be released soon. That was announced today by Senators Claiborne Pell and Jacob Javits, who recently visited Cuba, and it was later confirmed by the Cuban government. In baseball, the Los Angeles Dodgers won the National League pennant today, beating the Pittsburgh Pirates 12-1. And the Oakland A's won the American League pennant. The score of the last game, Oakland 2, Baltimore 1. That means the first all-West Coast World Series in baseball history.
This is Meeting Street in Charleston, South Carolina. And this is Charlie Batson. He's been running an Exxon station here for 51 years.
We've been here so long, since 1923, of course. I haven't come in there four generations. I've seen them start off and retire.
If you travel a few more blocks down Meeting Street, you'll find another Exxon station. This one is run by Charlie's brother, Teddy Batson. He's also been with Exxon for a long time.
Well, I've been in business 50 years, 1 year less than Charlie. You meet new friends and old friends and people that come from far away that we see year after year, and it's really a great pleasure to greet them back.
When you've been at something a long time, you get to be very good at it. Exxon is proud of its many dealers who have been at it for a long time.
In the Maryland election next month, one of the major party candidates in the election for governor is a woman, Louise Gore. And in the same election, one of the major party candidates for the U.S. Senate also is a woman, Barbara Mikulski. The two are among about 3,000 women who are running for city, state, and national office this year, three times as many as ran in 1972. Here is Douglas Kiker with more on women in politics and on the Maryland races.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, hello, good to see you.
My son,
yes.
Scott.
Hello, Scott.
Hi, nice to see you.
They are about as different in personal style and political philosophy, these two women are, as it's possible for any two people to be. Louise Gore, the Republican candidate for governor in Maryland, is rich, conservative, well-bred, and low-key.
Consideration to voting for Mr. Wade and myself.
You want a female Harry Truman. You got one. Walking,
got one.
Talking, and
that
showing.
Sounds like not a good news.
Hey, how are you?
Barbara Mikulski, who is the Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate in Maryland, is Polish and proud of it. Liberal and, well, loud.
Lady, nice to see you.
All right.
There you go. Nice to see you.
All right, hi.
Hi, Ms. Gore.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Despite these big differences in style and background, these two women candidates still have a lot in common. Neither is running a campaign specifically designed to attract women voters. Neither has ever held a statewide office before. In fact, they are the first women ever to run for either office in Maryland as the candidates of major political parties. And both of them triumphed over fields of male candidates to win their party's nominations. These two women have one other important thing in common. Both of them are expected to lose to their male opponents. Ms. Mikulski is running against Republican incumbent Charles Mathias, who is moderate, popular, and well-known. So it's an uphill road for her. Ms. Gore's opponent is the incumbent governor, Marvin Mandel, who has plenty of money, a big lead, and who delights in quietly tying Ms. Gore to Watergate. But win or lose, both Barbara Mikulski and Louise Gore are serious candidates, real contenders, not female figureheads. And as such, they represent a real change in American politics.
Well, hi, what a beautiful dashiki.
A lot of women, not just a few, but a lot of women are starting to seek major political office all over this nation, more and more each year. As a result, the years ahead are going to produce more and more women senators, more and more women governors, and ultimately, who knows what else? Douglas Kiker, NBC News, Washington.
Someday. Good night for NBC News.